From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for November the 22nd, 2015. Thank you for joining me on our weekly look at the politics of last week and what may lie ahead in the days to come. And given that weather, it's really time to grab that hot cup of coffee, get the Sunday paper, and we'll try to get you started off on a good note. Well, you know, Dave, I think it was a good thing that yesterday marked the Festival of Lights parade along Michigan Avenue, because it was so dark and gloomy and rainy and snowy and slushy that it looked like it was like 8 o'clock at night all day yesterday.
It did. And a lot of people that were there that were interviewed, the general reaction was, hey, it's cold and snowy, but it's a winter festival. So, you know, everything fit right in. And everybody was dressed for the part, too. Had to be.
Well, you better be. But I don't know. I mean, I like parades and the festival atmosphere and that kind of thing. But to sit out there, you know, for a couple hours, if you wanted a good spot, you know, to watch the parade and with.
Oh, just wait for a couple hours before everything starts.
Exactly.
Sure.
And all that stuff coming down. I mean, if there was ever a full day to sleep in and watch college football.
It was yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was the day. And then, you know, getting up this morning, the cold air, and I will say this.
It was invigorating, wasn't it?
Oh, that's one word for it. I can think of a few other
I
words.
I can think of other words
none of,
as well.
None of which will be heard on this radio station. But
hope not.
But, you know, I didn't feel much of a wind, you know, this morning at 5
no,
o'clock.
No, it was just cold. And the wind is right now just out of the west at 7, but that gives us a wind chill index of 0. Last hour, it was 1 below.
Yeah, well, but I will tell you, downtown, this wind is a bit brisk.
Well, sure, right off the lake.
Off the lake and then, you know, swirling through the buildings and everything.
Yeah.
And
if you do want to take a swim, the water temperature is warmer than the air right now.
I wonder if there's that haze over the lake that you kind of get when that happens, you know?
Maybe. I would imagine, though, if you're looking east toward, you know, western Michigan,
right,
you'll see that the cloud cover that you often see.
Oh, right, that forms over.
That forms over it, that you would see that. I obviously can't see that from where I am right now, but that storm that moved through gave the winter storm warnings. Again, all of things have expired now, but northwest Indiana and Berrien County, Michigan, was getting snow around 8-9 o'clock last night.
Yeah, well,
as that storm just kind of moved out.
Well, it was kind of funny yesterday when I woke up and I looked outside and I'm going, there was nothing, you know, downtown. There was,
right,
you know,
right.
But then I didn't realize there was the second shock wave that was to come in.
The second one. And as things got colder, things started to stick.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I want to thank you again for bringing out the newsroom Zamboni to take care of the sidewalks outside Tribune Tower. That was an experience.
we had to do a quick maintenance job on that.
Wow.
So
yeah,
it was ready to go.
A little slick out there. But, you know, well, we got Thanksgiving coming up, so it's a short week for a lot of people. And I'm looking forward to some turkey and some football on Thursday. And speaking of turkeys, of course, the Bears play on Thursday. Boom.
Yes, right. Noon today.
Yes.
And Denver is here at Soldier Field.
Extra security.
Yes, again, as we reported in the newscast, there will be extra security. They are highly recommending everybody to arrive as early as they can. The gates will open at 10, but people will be wanded and checked as they enter Soldier Field. The usual stipulations are in place, no large bags, no large purses, that type of thing, certainly now. But again, Rick, I want to emphasize that Police Superintendent McCarthy said they have no reports of any type of threat. However, you take no chances.
No, and you know, that's kind of the environment we're in, a heightened state of awareness right now.
And the story last week still applies to this week of the NFL generally imposing some stricter measures at all of the games last weekend, certainly right after the Paris attacks. But the same thing applies this week.
That's right. Well, go Bears. Be interesting to see the Bears play the Broncos without Peyton Manning as quarterback. So, you know, maybe that looks good. And then they play Green Bay on Thursday.
I loved the caption in the front page of the Tribune this morning, previewing the game, saying that this is going to be an interesting matchup with John Fox and Denver here today.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
and the line, the final line reading, no real significance here. Not at all.
No, it doesn't mean a thing. Of course not. Just lowered the expectations a little bit. Well, what do you got planned for Thanksgiving, Dave?
Well, Thanksgiving is everybody has their own traditions, right?
Right.
Mine is coming to work. So I'll be here Thanksgiving morning, bright and early, and then continuing in tradition, Dad will be here for the rest of the day, and we will do our usual Thanksgiving extra special meal at the Hilton and Towers in South Michigan, which always is nice. It's been just great, and certainly expect it to be this year as well. So that's going to be our day. I'll be here till around 10 or so, and then the rest of the afternoon taking in food and football.
Yes,
like you
food
said.
And well, I know the food is great over at the Hilton and Towers, but you're going to miss my jazzed up green bean casserole.
Well, what makes you think I'll miss it?
Well, unless I get
you may
you
get
some.
An unexpected phone call.
Okay, all right. Well, and we're going to post this recipe on the website.
Oh,
we've
great.
Done it. We've done it before, but this is it's a crock pot recipe, and it's kind of got your usual kind of green bean casserole stuff.
I love green bean casserole.
Well, but this is green beans, the French fried onions, mm-hmm. the cream of mushroom
mm-hmm.
soup,
right?
And then we add a few things to it. Some water chestnuts.
Oh.
Sliced water chestnuts.
That sounds tasty.
Don't give me heck for this, but Velveeta cheese. Okay. But then.
Why, is that because it melts the easiest?
Well, because some would question whether that's really cheese or not.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah.
But then the real topper to this, bacon. Lots of bacon.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And you let that cook.
All right, you've got a rather high sodium content going on here, but it still works.
Yeah, and you kind of let that cook. You can either do it slow for like 5.5 hours or,
the slower the better, really.
Well, it actually, with this, it won't hurt anything if you turn it on the high part of the crock pot and let it just take a couple hours to mm-hmm. cook through. But, yeah, and frankly, you get two bags of I always double the recipe, but the real recipe is two bags of frozen green beans, and you don't have to thaw them. You just throw them right in the crock pot. So, and then
because they'll thaw just as a matter of course
right.
when you're cooking them in
right.
the pot.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, we'll have the that's courtesy of the folks at Taste at Home magazine, and that's I swear it's great. I can have this just by itself.
Oh, yeah. I know.
I
you can make a meal on something.
I don't
like
need
that.
The turkey. I don't. The turkey will be on the grill. And I know people talk about brining turkeys and all that stuff. And
frying turkeys?
I've had it before, and I think it's good, but I've never made one. And I really wouldn't want to because, you've got to get a vat of oil to put that thing in.
Yeah.
And what do you do with the oil afterwards?
Yeah, good question. A friend of mine, though, raves about those deep-fried turkeys.
Well, it is.
Really, really liked it.
I will tell you what, just kind of the concept, though, does kind of scare me a bit when you see some of those horror videos on YouTube of people that haven't defrosted the turkey and
mm-hmm.
drop it in the oil. And
yeah.
It almost explodes. I mean, it's, be careful out there. I love the taste of it, but to me, it's like you put it on the grill, and that actually frees up the oven for all the other goodies that people are cooking on Thanksgiving.
Which reminds me of one of the great Butterball turkey stories I've heard. You know, the Butterball turkey
yes,
hotline?
Yes, of course.
Several years ago, there was a report of someone asked one of the people that take the phone calls, what is the most bizarre story you've ever heard? What's the funniest story you've ever heard? And they said, one year someone called frantically saying, I have had the turkey in the oven for hours and hours and hours, and it's not cooking at all. What's the problem? And they said, well, what do you have the temperature set at? They forgot to turn on the
oven.
Of course.
Yes. Do you remember the show The West Wing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you remember the time that Martin Sheen, playing the president, called the from the Oval Office, called the Butterball Turkey Hotline?
Oh, I think so. I thought you were going to say there was an episode where he was going to pardon a turkey, but
they all pardoned the turkey. But
no, that's right. He did call.
Yes.
This is the president.
No, he didn't. No, he was trying to say, you know, he was like he's an anonymous caller.
Mm-hmm.
He actually thought it'd be a great idea for someone to come up with the idea of a place that people could call to ask about problems cooking their turkey. And his chief of staff says, well, sir, they already have that. Wouldn't it be nice if that's all our presidents and leaders had to worry about
is,
you know,
calling,
those kinds of ideas?
Right. They have much more on their minds right now.
Unfortunately, yes, they do. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news and traffic. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls. That's the jazzed up green bean casserole for Jasmine, by the way, just so you
know. Hi, guys. Thank you.
And if there's any left over, I will be sure to bring
some.
Think
of me first, not Dave.
No. Dave would put it in the microwave, and then
You know what? I noticed some yellow tape around the microwave this morning for some reason. I don't know.
Police tape at the microwave. Never a good sign.
That's always here when I'm here on Sunday for some reason.
You can reach us at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at 312-981-7200. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, all one word. And on Twitter, @SundaySpin, Engineer Bob is putting the police tape around the microwave so Dave can't set fire to the place. You can also keep up with our shows on our podcast, and you can find those at WGNRadio.com. And you can also go to iTunes and search for Rick Pearson. Well, we're going to take our weekly spin through the national political news, but first we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. Overnight, a new ABC Washington Post national poll of the Republican contenders for the GOP nomination. Here's your numbers. Trump, 33. Carson, 22. Rubio, 11. Cruz, 7. Bush, 5. Fiorina, 4. Huckabee and Paul at 3. And Christie and Kasich at 2. That's the latest numbers from the ABC Washington Post national poll. Of course, the news over the past week, over the past more than a week, has been the ISIS attack on Paris and whether the U.S. should take a hard line against allowing Syrian refugees into the country. More than two dozen governors, mainly Republicans, including Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, want to pause on Syrian refugees resettling in their states until there are assurances that these refugees have been vetted. And the U.S. House voted for similar action in a vote that could overcome a veto from President Obama. The president is on his way back from Malaysia, and before he left, he said that in his belief, the most powerful tool to fight ISIS is to prevent the group's recent terror attacks from injecting fear in communities or governments around the world. We do not succumb to fear, Obama said during a news conference after this nine-day, three-nation trip overseas. Quote, the most powerful tool we have to fight ISIL is to say that we're not afraid, to not elevate them, and to somehow buy into their fantasy that they're doing something important. Those are the president's words, but this has become a big topic in the Republican presidential contest, as well as in the Democratic contest. But speaking of Republicans, here's Ted Cruz, who kind of kicked off this topic about keeping an eye on refugees. Here's Ted Cruz.
President Obama and Hillary Clinton's idea that we should bring tens of thousands of Syrian Muslim refugees to America is nothing less than lunacy. If you look at the early waves of refugees that have flooded in into Europe, one estimate was that 77% of those refugees were young men. That's a very odd demographic for a refugee wave. The Director of National Intelligence here in America has said of those refugees in Europe, it is clear that a significant number of them may well be ISIS terrorists. It makes no sense whatsoever for us to be bringing in refugees who our intelligence cannot determine if they are terrorists here to kill us or not. Those who are fleeing persecution should be resettled in the Middle East and majority Muslim countries. Now, on the other hand, Christians who are being targeted for genocide, for persecution, Christians who are being beheaded or crucified, we should be providing safe haven to them.
Now, that's Ted Cruz kind of trying to parse the refugee question, even though there's no real answer of how you could determine who's really a Christian, who's really a Muslim. President Obama heard those remarks, and he blasted Cruz.
We do not close our hearts to these victims. And when I hear folks say that, well, maybe we should just admit the Christians but not the Muslims. When I hear political leaders suggesting that there would be a religious test for which person who's fleeing from a war-torn country is admitted, when some of those folks themselves come from families who benefited from protection when they were fleeing political persecution, that's shameful. That's not American. That's not who we are.
That's President Obama. We're going to pick up our national spin through politics following the 8 o'clock hour. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills.
Now, The Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. It's 7:36 on this chilly and brisk Sunday morning here in downtown Chicago. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase studio. I want to extend a special thank you to the folks out at Aurora University. I moderated a panel with the authors of the book Fixing Illinois, Jim Nolan and Tom Johnson, and former House Republican leader Tom Cross. And a special thank you to the university's president, Rebecca Sherrick. Got a chance to meet her, got a chance to meet a lot of good people. We had a great turnout. We had about 300 people out there. And, of course, Fixing Illinois, even though it, I think we went about an hour and a half, we probably could have gone about 4 hours to try to go through all the topics. But a lot of interesting ideas in that book. And as I joked with the authors when they wrote the book, I said, when it comes to fixing Illinois, you could only come up with 98 ideas to fix it. But a very good book, and something if you want to get involved, and I encourage everybody to get involved, you ought to take a look at this. And it not only tells you kind of how we got there, but it provides some ideas to find our way out of this mess. And not all of them, you know, are necessarily doable in the political environment we live in, but certainly worthy of talking about. And speaking about talking about ideas, I'm joined on the phone with Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills. Representative, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. What's going on with our Hawks? It's a tough road trip so far.
You know, you notice I didn't mention them in the first half hour, and one reason was because, one, they were playing Vancouver, and it was past my bedtime for Sunday morning, and two, when I got up and saw the score, and 6-3, a loss, I think I'm probably was better off sleeping than I was watching that game. You tell me what's going on.
Well, it's still early in the season. We're going to win the Stanley Cup, but a bad two games, that's for sure.
Well, and our record now is 11-8. That's not, I'm not happy with that, but it is a long season, but, you know, every point counts, and we got to get going. Speaking about got to get going, are we ever going to get a budget in this state?
What an embarrassment, what a mess. Every day that goes by, the deficit increases. 91% of the spending is on autopilot through court orders and consent decrees and automatic appropriations. We have a situation in which we're destroying our social services infrastructure in this state, and our credit ratings are going to get downgraded again. It's an embarrassment to the state. It's a mess, and what we should be doing is adopting a permanent budget, and I'm hopeful that we'll see some progress because we have to. We're going to destroy the state if we don't adopt a budget soon.
Well, we've seen some small moves. The issue of the state-subsidized child care assistance program, where the governor had proposed very strict eligibility rules and basically rescinded much of that. But you still seem to have this, you know, test of wills between the governor and House Speaker Michael Madigan.
We do, but the rank and file needs to rise up, and we need to adopt a budget, Rick, because, again, every day that goes by, things are getting worse. We're not saving money by not having a budget. We're actually increasing the deficit every day, and you might have seen last week now people are talking about a massive tax increase, a tax on retirement income, and raising the income tax. That's exactly the wrong answer for Illinois, and every day that goes by is going to make the deficit worse. So I don't understand why the leaders aren't meeting. I don't understand why we're not in session around the clock. It's a $67,000 a year part-time job. We should be doing our job. We should be adopting a budget.
Well, you know, last week was supposed to be the much-heralded meeting of the governor and the four tops, as they're known, and Speaker Madigan said that because of a death in the family, he couldn't make it. And so that got pushed to December 1st. And I just, you know, to me, that sounds frustrating because there are urgent needs that are unmet needs out there.
Well, our homeless citizens, especially in this cold weather, we're not seeing full funding for programs for autism, for the developmentally disabled, and people are talking about tax increases. My sympathy to the speaker, I know, was legitimate. There was a death in his family, but why aren't they meeting today? Why are they meeting tomorrow? We're going to lose another week and a half by waiting until December 1st. And it's got to the point where it used to be, you know, comical that they didn't meet since May because it was so ridiculous. Now it's just sad, and it's making people mad. People don't understand why we're literally destroying this state. That's what's happening. Every day that goes by, the deficit increases. People are talking about raising taxes again, and the citizens of the state are just frustrated.
Well, I mentioned that event out at Aurora University, and in talking to former Republican leader Cross, it was his view that he's not sure there will be a budget till a year from now, after the general election, because he does not see the votes for any kind of a tax increase in an election year.
We need a budget now. I mean, I keep saying that, Rick, but look what's happening by not having a budget is we are driving more people out of the state. We're losing people in our social services infrastructure. The deficit is increasing, and we need to do our job and adopt a budget. I mean, people are talking about January. They're talking about, you know, after the primary now in March. By that time, we could be dealing with a $20 billion problem. $6.5 billion of unpaid bill, a $6 billion deficit this year, and about a $7 billion deficit next year. That means we'll fall below investment grade, which means interest costs will increase for the taxpayers of this state unnecessarily in the future. It's outrageous. We should do our job and adopt a budget now. I don't understand. Nobody can explain to me why we aren't in session now. People say, well, we won't get anything done. Well, we shouldn't get paid any per diems. We should be down in Springfield, and people should be talking. And I think that's really the key right now, is to get people talking. To think that the leaders haven't had a meeting since May 28th, I mean, again, it's not comical anymore. It's outrageous.
When you mentioned earlier about you believe that, you know, the rank and file need to kind of get motivated, and I kind of thought I saw some of that in the fact that there was an effort to pass some legislation to make sure that municipalities, you know, get some of their motor fuel tax money, that perhaps some of the local officials are starting to put pressure on rank and file lawmakers, and kind of there's an undercurrent here of dissatisfaction going on. And I have to admit, I think it's on the Republican side, but I also think it's on the Democratic side as well.
I think any good legislator is focused on getting a budget done. Nobody is patting us on the back saying, you know, great job. You're not in session. You're not adopting a budget. People are saying you guys are ridiculous. You know, even supporters. And all of us are to blame because we are complicit in a situation and we're just watching this happen. That's why I've been very vocal. That's why I've been pressing very hard. And I think it's absolutely incumbent upon every member to do the same. And you brought up this whole issue on the motor fuel tax to show you how outrageous things are. Money that's collected, motor fuel taxes for local governments, it's being held hostage. Money to pay lottery winners, that's a reliable revenue stream in the future, is also being held hostage for no reason. And that's going to result in higher property taxes at the local level. It's going to result in lower revenue in the future for the revenue. And we're doing it for absolutely no reason. So a small step, we passed the bill to allow local governments to get the money that they actually deserve, that's for them, and to pay lottery winners so we don't destroy our revenue source in the future. And now it's still sitting in the House. I hope it gets sent over to the Senate. But it just shows you we didn't do anything in our last session to move things on forward in the budget. We just reversed some decisions from the past. And we need to move forward in this state, and we need to do our jobs.
We're speaking with Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills, as we talk about the ever-ongoing stalemate in Springfield. And Representative, how much of, again, speaking about the rank and file, how much of this is fear on both sides of the leaders or the governor to be able to use their money to basically try to control the votes of the rank and file as kind of a loyalty issue?
I think a lot of it right now has to do with the people have been counting on the leaders to stand up and to meet and to try to reach some type of overall global deal on the governor's agenda and also on budget issues, and it just hasn't happened. So I think that the view among the members that I talk about is that if this meeting on December 1st doesn't produce concrete results and a schedule, is that we as members have to do our jobs and we have to move forward and try to force leaders to adopt a budget. You know, there's already too much talk of politics, Rick, in Springfield. The election is next November. And I know we're talking about a primary in March, but the approval rating for the General Assembly is below 10%, just a little above the margin for error. So I think the last thing that people in Springfield and leaders and others should be talking about is politics at this point and threatening people and that type of thing. Well, we should be threatening we should not be threatening the people of the state of Illinois with not doing a budget. And that's what's happening. I mean, that's a threat to our economic security in the state going forward. While other states are producing jobs and economic growth, I think the budget impasse here is creating a real economic problem in the state of Illinois.
But how do you really divorce it from politics when you're looking, you know, Monday is the first day of filing for the March 15th primary, a filing period that runs roughly a week. But do you think after the filing period, and maybe people see if they're going to get primaried or not, if that might kind of lift a brick on some of the action?
Potentially with some members who might be looking at that type of thing, but we're only supposed to be in one day in December now. The only day that we're scheduled to be in is on December 2nd. I think I'd be much more positive about where we stand if we were scheduled to be in the entire month of December, literally, because I just can't stress enough to the people who are listening the damage that's being done to the state by not having a budget. Again, we're not saving money. The government is not shut down. 91% of it's on autopilot. The only thing that's not being funded is some of the funding for our most vulnerable citizens and also the college grants for our students and our great Illinois universities. And the answer that many have, and we saw a lot of that this week, Rick, is people are talking about massive tax increases, massive. They're taxing retirement income, senior citizens of the state, raising the income tax, raising the corporate income tax rate. That's the absolute wrong answer for the state of Illinois. So we should be in session. We should be adopting a budget.
Well, but we are going to need some revenue. It's, I mean, this can't be done just with cuts alone.
You know, I think, Rick, as we've talked about a couple times, I think he can. But what we need to do is we need to focus on the number one issue that nobody's talking about anymore, which is pensions. And President Cullerton, the Senate Democratic president, has actually had some very constructive ideas on this. He has a proposal that would give employees a choice. I believe it's constitutional, that they could either count future salary increases towards calculating pensions and receive a lower cost of living adjustment. We could save a lot of money, or they could receive their 3% compounded COLA and receive lower benefits. And we've talked about this before. We could restructure, reamortize, and specifically the Supreme Court said we can, the pension obligations. We can eliminate waste and fraud from Medicaid, cut the operational administrative budgets of each state department and agency. So I think we should be talking about those type of reforms. We don't have to move forward with a program of draconian cuts. If we address pensions within the constitutional framework, if we re-amortize or restructure the pension debt, and we cut spending, we could avoid a tax increase. Now, the worst part of this is since the deficit is increasing every day, people will be talking about revenues even more in the future. And those are revenues, if they're raised, that'll be a direct result of the legislature not doing the job that we're supposed to be, which is controlling spending and adopting a budget. So the budget would have been a $4 billion deficit if we had adopted a budget back in July. Because we're spending so much money now, it's all on autopilot, it's going to be a $6 billion deficit. So that $2 billion change there is a direct result of the General Assembly not doing our job.
Representative, where does Chicago's want-need list fit into all of this budget discussion?
Well, we have to address the issues in Chicago. Chicago is the important economic engine driving the state in many ways, and it can't be us against Chicago. So I think looking at some of the ideas that have come out of the Senate, combining a property tax freeze — property taxes are too high in this state — with offering some relief or restructuring of the pension obligations of Chicago is the right way to go. We can't watch as 5,000 teachers are laid off in the city of Chicago. We need to focus, obviously, on making sure our children are well-educated in the state. So Chicago needs to be part of the equation. And I think the answer is pretty simple, in my view. The governor has an agenda on property taxes and workers' comp that are important to him. Mark me down as a yes vote. He should get a vote. The speaker and the Senate president should allow a vote on his agenda on property taxes and workers' comp. And then let's move forward immediately and do a budget. And we also need to address, as part of that, within the property tax freeze, the issues that are facing the city of Chicago. We need to reform CPS. We've seen the fraud and we've seen the high expenses, but it needs to be part of a solution that we adopt now. But waiting is not the answer. Waiting will make things worse.
Well, you know, you kind of touched on an issue there that I was curious about, too, and perhaps this might be more attuned for downstate lawmakers, but when you look at the issue of Barbara Bird Bennett and the Supes contracting scandal, whether that provides an excuse for some lawmakers to just be — not that they would necessarily vote yes in any event, but that would be kind of their excuse to help default their no vote on helping the cities, particularly city public schools.
Well, if we don't help the city of Chicago, we can't have a global solution for the state of Illinois. We're all one state, and we need to look at it that way. And my view is that a fair deal is that the rest of the state, including Chicago as part of the deal, gets property tax relief, especially after these massive tax increases in Chicago that I oppose. And in return for that we offer some pension relief and also pension reform in Chicago. I mean, the Chicago pension plan is heading to the Supreme Court. Things aren't looking good for the way the Supreme Court's going to rule. So why don't we use the Cullerton model of trying to reduce these costs of living adjustments as a mitigation or a first step going forward, not only for the state, but for the city of Chicago. Again, that's bipartisan. There's no way you can address this budget issue in the state and in Chicago unless you're addressing pensions. And the Supreme Court has given us very, very narrow options, but I think the Cullerton proposal is a good start.
That's Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills, and we'll be checking in with you again, hopefully post-budget.
Well, I'm hoping that post-budget is sooner rather than later, because we're destroying the state if we don't adopt the budget. And thank you very much for having me on, Rick.
Maybe I should have asked you, will the Blackhawks win another Stanley Cup before we get a state budget, you know?
I hope the Stanley Cup is well after the budget is passed, because if we're sitting around here talking about this next year, we've got a lot of trouble. And I've heard great things about that program that Tom Cross and you did the other day at Aurora. So thank you for that service to people. And I think getting people educated about what's going on in this state is very important. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative McSweeney. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll have a very special guest. My daughter, Kate Pearson, joins the show, and she's a senior in strategic communications at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. We'll talk about some of the controversy that I touched on last week about what's going on down at Mizzou.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson in the Allstate Showcase studio on a very chilly and somewhat icy Michigan Avenue out there. Some of the joggers kind of walking around with great trepidation up and down the sidewalks here on North Michigan Avenue.
I saw some people yesterday who had no fear. I saw quite a few people out jogging yesterday.
Yesterday? Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, but it was still... It was the freeze overnight
that
I
did
think,
it.
Is,
yeah.
Yeah, that and your newsroom Zamboni that helped. It's the cruel Zamboni that you drive, I have to tell you.
It's now nicknamed the Schwanee, by the way.
The Schwanee?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, get the Schwanee needs an oil change. Get to that, will you? Well, welcome back for the next hour of the Sunday Spin. And I want to go back through kind of this spin in national politics, and we were talking about the issue of Syrian refugees and the issue of how to combat ISIS. And I guess we should stop with the latest and still front runner in the Republican primary, Donald Trump. And Trump won't dismiss the idea of having a separate registry of Muslims in the U.S., as well as warning about Syrian refugees.
We have no documentation on these people. And I said, you probably saw a couple of weeks ago, I'm looking at this migration, and it's a terrible thing. I have a bigger heart. I mean, I have a tremendous heart. I want to take care of people. But you look at this migration, and I said to my wife the other day, I said, you know, they seem like so many men, and they're so strong. I mean, they're strong-looking guys. Not as strong as you, but that's okay. No, but they're strong-looking guys. They're powerful-looking guys. So I said, why aren't they back fighting for their country? That was number one. Then I say, is this a Trojan horse? We all know the story of the Trojan horse.
Now, on the Senate floor, Illinois' Democratic Senior Senator Dick Durbin says the U.S. should be helping the refugees.
Several people have reacted to the tragedy in France and the United States by calling for us to suspend refugees coming to this country. Many of these people have not reflected on the refugee situation in our country. Each year, the United States of America accepts about 70,000 refugees from around the world. These refugees are each carefully investigated, reviewed, and vetted. That process takes anywhere from 18 to 24 months before a refugee from any part of the world is allowed to enter the United States. We do everything humanly possible and take extraordinary efforts to make certain that dangerous people do not arrive on our shores.
So what to do about ISIS? That's also part of the debate. Here's former Republican Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, a candidate for the nomination, telling Fox News Radio that he thinks Obama is in cahoots with ISIS.
Russia is at least leading. This president has been following. This president makes excuses for not acting, and if you look at what this president has done with ISIS, it is the worst foreign policy in the history of America. The president's policy toward ISIS is to contain ISIS. ISIS's policy, in order to gain credibility as a caliphate in the Middle East and around the world, is to maintain their territorial integrity.
Now, Florida Senator Marco Rubio says he believes Obama didn't want to take on ISIS because the president wanted a legacy of not having the U.S. tangled up in the Middle East.
It will take a more robust U.S. engagement in order to begin to turn the corner on this conflict. And the president either rhetorically won't make that commitment and in fact, literally won't make that commitment as well. You've seen some tactical changes over the last few weeks that have borne some fruit, but by and large, from a strategic point of view, the U.S. still does not have a well-defined strategy, and in the absence of an American strategy towards ISIS and jihadism in general, you won't be able to pull together a global coalition that's effective. Only American leadership can provide the outlines of such a strategy, and only American leadership can lead such a coalition.
Now, there's been a lot of hawkish talk about a robust U.S. response to ISIS, but Carly Fiorina says it's too early to put military boots of U.S. troops on the ground.
There are a whole host of things that we should have done that we have not done. And unfortunately, I think Obama has managed to polarize the debate about what to do with ISIS with a false choice. The false choice that Obama presents to the American people is, if you don't agree with what I am not doing, then the only option is tens of thousands of boots on the ground. It's simply false. So let us begin with, we've had a fairly effective bombing campaign over the last couple of days. Why haven't we been doing that for a year and a half?
Now, on the Democratic side, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has been anything but a hawk. But he told Katie Couric on Yahoo News that the U.S. needs to be smart in going after ISIS.
I am pledged, as I hope all members of the United States Congress are, to do everything that we can to destroy ISIS and wipe them, frankly, off the face of this earth. That type of barbarity should not be allowed to continue. But what we have got to be, Katie, in my view, is not just strong and tough, but we have got to be smart. You will remember way back in 2002, the United States, President Bush said, well, you know, we're going to be tough. We're going to go into Iraq. We're going to go into Afghanistan before that. And, you know, it's not going to be very difficult. And we're just going to overthrow those governments and create a democratic society. And we'll bring our troops home. Didn't quite happen like that.
Meanwhile, frontrunner Hillary Clinton has gone far beyond what the Obama administration's strategy has been in laying out her foreign policy agenda.
Time is of the essence. ISIS is demonstrating new ambition, reach, and capabilities. We have to break the group's momentum, and then it's back. Our goal is not to deter or contain ISIS, but to defeat and destroy ISIS.
When we come back, we'll talk about the controversies at the University of Missouri with my daughter, Kate, a senior in strategic communications at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson in the Allstate Showcase studio. I don't know if you got a chance to hear last week's show, but I did, I guess, what I would call a Rick rant. And it was a rant over the issue of a protest at the University of Missouri in Columbia where a mass communications professor basically physically intimidated a student, telling the student to get out of an area that was on the quad, a public space, as he was kind of documenting the kind of protest that was going on. And I want to replay the kind of the incidents. You get a feeling of where am I coming from here as before I chat with my daughter, Kate, who's down at the University of Missouri. So here is student reporter Mark Schierbecker, who, by the way, has filed charges with the University of Missouri police against mass communications professor Melissa Click.
Hi, media. Can I talk to you?
No, you need to get out. Well, you need to get out.
No, I don't.
You need to get out.
I actually don't.
All right. Hey, who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here. Help me get him out. Who's going to help me?
Are you documenting? What are you doing?
I'm documenting.
Okay, well,
you need to get out. You need to get out.
This is public property.
Yeah, I know, that's university. A really good one. I'm a communication faculty, and I really get that argument. But sir, you need to go. You need to go. You need to go.
And, of course, my response last week to that was to Melissa Click that you need to go. But joining me on the phone right now is my daughter, Kate, who was a senior in strategic communications at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. And you've been seeing these protests, Kate. How are things on campus right now?
Hello, good morning. I guess things on campus have calmed down quite a bit. I think it's important to know that, you know, we're not a campus that's completely burning down in flames and we're not running around in total chaos. You know, there was, and I think there still is to a certain extent, a division on this campus about, you know, the protests and about the issue of racism. But as of right now, you know, campus is completely safe. And not in utter chaos, like everyone believes.
Well, there is a belief, though, I think, that and a concern about the reputation of the University of Missouri. And, you know, you and I had talked before about, you know, what was it, just a year ago, you said the campus was so unified behind the fact that one of the Missouri football players came out as gay.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, honestly, it hurts to see the reputation of a place that I've called home these past 4 years, you know, completely tarnished to those outside of Columbia. You know, you hear parents on tours with their, you know, kids asking questions about the safety of their students. You know, some parents of my friends are pleading with their sons and daughters not to return back to Mizzou next semester. You know, I even heard some Tennessee fans from last night's game were a little apprehensive about coming to Columbia. You know, so in my time at Mizzou, I don't think I've ever witnessed such an accepting group of students, but it's also a group of students that are willing to fight for, you know, this more tolerant society. Protests have always been kind of a huge part of Mizzou's past, but it's important for people to remember that this still is the same school that rallied behind Michael Sam. You know, we're still the same school that has huge LGBTQ marches every semester. You know, we're still the same school that has an African-American student body president. You know, the majority of us here are accepting and are tolerant to a better society.
Well, and certainly there were valid concerns among African-American students there, the concerned student 1950, the student group that's named for the year that the first black graduate student was admitted to the university, you know, concerns involving President Tim Wolf, who stepped down, and Chancellor Bowen Lofton, who is also leaving. And, you know, part of that, I have to say, was I noted that when the then president, Tim Wolf, was in Kansas City, and a group of University of Missouri students approached him outside of a fundraiser and asked him to give his definition of systemic oppression. His answer was, "I will give you an answer, and I'm sure it will be a wrong answer. Systemic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success." And that the students said, "Did you just blame us for systemic oppression, Tim Wolf? Did you just blame the black students?" And it was that kind of insensitivity he later apologized for. But nevertheless, you know, that was enough to kind of activate the student body at large.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I saw that video. Somebody recorded it on a phone. And I think it's important that Mizzou, you know, takes this time. And I think Thanksgiving break is coming at a good time. You know, takes this couple, you know, weeks, couple days, and kind of figures out, people are put into leadership positions and kind of figures out where we go from here, absolutely, to become a more tolerant campus.
Well, and they have taken some steps. They've appointed a senior administration official for minority outreach. But do you think the fact that Tim Wolf leaving as the school's president kind of lifted a huge brick on what was going on the campus?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think his resignation was important for students to kind of have, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. I think it was important for the movement. I think it really made them feel like, wow, I'm actually making changes on this campus. You know, I'm actually being heard. You know, something good is actually going to come out of this.
Do you think that really would have happened if the football team and the African American students on the Mizzou football team hadn't threatened the boycott?
That is a very good question, and that's actually a question that we've been talking about in some of our classes. You know, is it sad that the football team had to get involved in order for this change to happen? You know, would it have happened? Honestly, I don't think his resignation would have happened if the football team hadn't have stepped in. His resignation is obviously a vital part to the movement, but I don't think it was, you know, getting national coverage until the football team decided hey, we're going to take a stand.
Well, and indeed, one of those student journalists that was documenting what was going on in the quad was actually a Mizzou student who was on a freelance assignment for ESPN, which also made this very, very much of a national story.
But yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, the story wasn't exactly picked up until, you know, the football team got involved.
But are you comfortable on campus?
Yes. Yes.
As a concerned father.
Yes, Mizzou is. It always has been. It's my favorite place. You know, I mean, there were a couple days when there was the complete chaos and the shooting threats, and you know, there were a couple days when I felt a little unsafe. And you know, I do have some night classes, so walking to, you know, class at 8 o'clock at night when it gets early, you know, now at 7, I was a little concerned. But as of right now, you know, I sit in the business school and I see all the tours, and you know, you see parents asking questions about safety and all the precautions Mizzou takes, and you know, it kind of, I'm sitting there and it kind of, you know, it hurts a little bit. You know, this is a place that I love dearly, and you know, it's my home. And I feel completely safe at Mizzou. Absolutely.
Well, Kate, I think you're a very good ambassador for the University of Missouri. And I think you've learned something in those strategic communications classes.
I think so, too. One or two things.
All right. Well, Kate, thanks very much for joining me this morning. And good job on the radio.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm headed home.
Very good. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, Jackie Algie, Vice President of the Service Employees International Union, Healthcare Illinois, and we'll be talking about the issue of state-subsidized child care and a controversial vote in the legislature.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
8:36 on this bright and sunny and chilly Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson in the snug, warm, and newly decorated for Christmas Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me here in the studio is Jackie Algie, Vice President of the Service Employees International Union, Healthcare Illinois. And Jackie, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
And I wanted to have you in because of the issue of state-subsidized child care. And this has been a controversy since the governor unveiled rules to dramatically decrease the eligibility of the eligibility levels for people to get into the program and qualify for a subsidy. It went from, I think the threshold of eligibility was 185% of the poverty level, and the governor brought that down to 50% of the poverty level, and I think all but freezing intake of new people. Maybe you can explain what does that really mean?
So what that means is parents and working families who have their children in the child care program or in daycare and home care, home daycare facilities, who rely on support or funding from the child care assistance program were then denied. They were restricted from applying, those that were new to the or wanted to be new to the program, and those that were existent recipients were then denied funding for support. And so as a result, a number of parents had to either make serious choices about the care for their children. In some cases, parents were having to quit their jobs, take lesser hours because they didn't have the support of family or otherwise to look, you know, and provide the care for their children that their children deserve and need.
And plus, you saw this, a number of the child care providers were starting, that network was starting to collapse.
A number of child care providers went out of business, they cut their hours. And in addition to that, daycare centers were closing around the state.
So now the governor recently, to some extent, reversed some of those rules, raising the eligibility level back to 162% of the poverty level. But that's not the full 185%. And then we had a vote in Springfield that would have overturned the governor's action and just returned it back to the 185% level. There was a vote in the House on that. The measure failed by one vote when Representative Ken Duncan, who said he brokered the agreement that got Rauner to return the level at least higher, Duncan didn't vote for the bill.
He did not vote for the bill.
And you were emphatic in your criticism at following that vote in a press conference in Springfield attended by House Speaker Michael Madigan.
Mm-hmm. And what I've said to people, Rick, is that I was telling the truth as the truth should have been told. There was a delegation of people that met with Representative Duncan several weeks prior to that vote. And during that meeting, we had a real firm discussion with regard to his support of the child care initiative. And he promised, he also signed a pledge. I wish I had brought it with me this morning.
It's in the video.
And he signed a pledge to vote in support of Senate Bill 570. What we found out on November 10th is that it was more important for Representative Duncan to keep his word to Governor Rauner than it was to keep his word to his constituents.
Now, and this isn't the first time that Representative Duncan has voted opposite of his Democratic colleagues. There was another vote. I believe there's now like three votes because there was also part of this proposal was also about, I believe, senior standards for care for seniors.
That's correct.
And that also was a major issue. And, you know, he says, I was the broker to get him to kind of reverse things. I pressed him consistently. I encouraged him. It was not political upmanship on someone. But he was in a very heated Democratic closed-door caucus meeting when he said he wasn't going to vote for the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
As someone posted on Twitter, if you have legislation pending in Springfield, maybe you don't want Ken Duncan to be the sponsor of it.
I know. And sadly enough, I would agree. And I also would disagree with him that he is the one that moved the governor to lift the restrictions on the child care assistance program. I would say that thousands, literally thousands of parents and working families and community throughout this state, in addition to those that provide care to our children on a daily basis, really had their voices heard over the last 3 months since the budget was not passed, effectively as of July 1st. People have literally been in the streets and just pushing this message that we can't have people out here who really want to work, need to work, and take care of their families and not be able to as a result of not having adequate child care. And in order to have that, we have to have funding from the state. And so I would say that that's where the pressure came from to the governor or on the governor, not from Representative Duncan.
And I have to tell you, in talking to some Republicans and Democrats, and this was an initiative of the governor's own. Mm-hmm. This was not result of legislation, mm-hmm. Not necessarily result of the budget situation, although they may argue otherwise. But in talking to Republicans and Democrats, they point how the child care assistance program was a key bipartisan part of that movement of welfare to work, and that with this kind of help to pair lower income parents, lower wage earning parents, that, you know, this is kind of the perfect support network program to move people off welfare.
Absolutely, Rick, and I'm glad that you mentioned that because that was another factor. That there were a number of Republicans who had agreed and offered their support and committed to giving their support on that bill as well. And I think that that was an issue for the governor and his decision.
Well, and I was going to ask you about that because what the governor basically did was take Republicans then off the hook for having to vote on that legislation.
That's correct. And he did that by, you know, Mr. Duncan voting present and not voting in support of.
Well, and I, earlier in the program, I had Representative Dave McSweeney on, a Republican from Barrington Hills, and he pointed out that throughout this budget impasse, there seems to be, you know, a growing, stirring unrest, not just Republicans, but Democrats, too, about kind of this, the forces of political leadership here versus the needs of their constituents, be they, you know, regular voters, be they local mayors, those kinds of things.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, we have what is known in Springfield as the Four Tops. You know, as I was driving here, I was thinking, you know, it could be the Four Tops or the Five Bottoms. It doesn't matter. The main thing is that the people of this state deserve to have the best care and opportunity that they can to live and take care of their families.
We're speaking with Jackie Algie, Vice President of the Service Employees International Union Healthcare Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin. I'm in the Allstate Showcase Studio along with Jackie Algie, Vice President of the Service Employees International Union Healthcare Illinois. And we're talking about some of the controversy over the issues of subsidized child care for lower wage earners and some of the moves that occurred recently in Springfield, including the fact that a bill to return eligibility levels back to where they had been, basically overturning attempts by Governor Rauner to lower them. That bill failed by one vote, and Jackie was very vociferous in her criticism of Representative Ken Duncan, and this is, I think Speaker Madigan said, this is the third time there's been a vote that Ken Duncan has sided with the governor. And I mean, you said that when following the vote, you said that Duncan's actions showed, quote, that he's willing to use vulnerable people as political pawns along with our governor, unquote. That was in the heat of battle. You still feel that way?
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And I'll tell you why, Rick. One of the reasons that people were pushing so hard to make sure that that vote took place and that it was successful in being won was to send a message, if you would, to the governor that you should not have that kind of authority over a program that is so vital to the people of Illinois, just arbitrarily making decisions that could really impact their lives, as was done on June 30th or subsequently on July 1st when the budget was not passed. And so there are still more than 12,000 children currently today who do not have care as a result. So him saying, you know, I'm lifting the restrictions hasn't really changed anything a whole lot. And we still do not have guarantee that he won't change his mind. So there was a hearing that was held after November 10th, a JCAR hearing.
That's the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, which is a bipartisan committee.
That is correct. And his representative did not seem to be as informed about what the governor's final decision would be, nor could they make a commitment.
Right, because part of the, quote, deal, as it were, was that even though it's been restored to 162% of poverty level, was with a budget, it would go back to what it originally was at 185% of the poverty level.
That is correct.
But the representative from the administration that appeared at this hearing wouldn't make that commitment, and that caused a great deal of consternation too.
That is correct. And you know, and so when you cannot trust, as we learned we couldn't trust Representative Duncan, you can't trust the word of the governor, that's a real problem.
Now the administration has said that they are 185% is their, that's where what they will restore to. But it's kind of you from your side, it's we'll believe it when we see it.
Absolutely.
So what's the next step politically here? SEIU has always been very politically active. Monday is the first day of filing for legislature.
It is.
I assume SEIU has a candidate.
We do. Her name is Juliana Stratton, and she is a very viable candidate for Representative Duncan, but she also has a proven track record of her work and her commitment to not only the 5th District, but the state of Illinois at large. And so we have started moving petitions in support of Ms. Stratton, and you know, we got a deadline to meet to get those petitions in.
A week from tomorrow.
That is absolutely correct. And so we are confident that we'll, you know, make that mark and exceed the number of signatures that she'll need to get on the ballot, because that's the most important thing, getting her on the ballot.
There's another issue that's going on that I wanted to talk to you about, and it's the issue of health insurance for child care workers. And I assume this is all part of the labor negotiations that are still ongoing with the larger public employees unions over coming up with new contract. Can you tell me what is going on as far as that health insurance issue?
Yeah, so the governor has chosen, again, to not fund or put money into the health fund for workers who provide vital services in our community. For example, home care workers who take care of seniors and people with disabilities. And they work under the Department of Rehabilitation, but there's a contractual agreement with the state that, and these workers fought hard to have that, and this is prior to Governor Reiner taking office, but they fought hard to get health care for themselves, as they, I think they deserve. I mean, they helped to take care of people every day, and then they had the risk of not being able to take care of themselves so that they could do their jobs and live healthier lives. And so we filed a lawsuit, and it has a temporary restraining order against Governor Reiner to save health insurance for those workers who take care of adults and people with disabilities as well as seniors.
Now, what is the status of is there insurance now provided? Did you get the TRO or
there's insurance, but there's no money in the fund, and it will.
This is all part
expire.
Of the budget.
That's right. It will expire as of the end of December if he doesn't put money into the fund.
Oh, aren't these fun and games with no state budget in Illinois?
I know. And the sad part about it is that the majority of the people who really deserve the best from our legislators and our leaders are not getting it. They're not getting it. And that's very unfortunate, because there are more of them and us. I'll say us because I'm a part of that 99%. There are more of us than that 1% of people who could help to shape the direction of our state budget better if they were to pay their fair share in taxes, for example.
That's Jackie Algy, Vice President of the Service Employees International Union Healthcare Illinois. Jackie, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate you having me on.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Representative Dave McSweeney from Barrington Hills, my daughter Kate on her way home for Thanksgiving from the School of Mass Communications at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and Jackie Algy, Vice President of SEIU Healthcare Illinois. Most of all, I want to thank you all for listening, and a happy Thanksgiving to you all. And now it's time for Dean, and I love the Twitter that got put up to
What's say, that?
It's my WGN radio show starts right now. No shoveling or de-icing required.
Yes.
Now, but
somebody's reading my Twitter account.
Well, I was going
to know people actually read those things.
I was going to ask you about the shoveling part, though. Come on.
Well. No shoveling on the part of the listeners.
Okay.
You've listened in the other Sunday mornings, you know there's plenty of shoveling that goes around. And I always recommend hip boots as we begin the show today.
No dibs on that.
I can't believe this is the same Michigan Avenue that I saw on TV last night.
Well, it is very icy out there, though.
It is very icy. That's true. But there were like a million people down here last night.
I don't know that I could... I was saying that to Dave Schwann earlier. I don't know that I could stand and like
no
get
way.
Here 2 hours beforehand.
No way, but people do. I remember when we covered it, when we were the official station for it all, before Disney went to the dark side, that people would be outside 8-10 hours with their kids.
Right.
In much colder and much snowier weather than there is now, because they wanted to see Santa and they wanted to see Mickey and Minnie.
Well,
and us here in the showcase. Just leaving a little pause there for shoveling.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Go
thank
on.
You.